Welcome to the iLEAP's Early Careers podcast, where we explore scientific research related to the biosphere and the atmosphere, and share the personal experiences of our early careers scientists as they navigate their way through academia. Our podcast today forms part of a series in which we learn more about the scientific research conducted by early career scientists, both in and from the region of Latin America.
So on today's iLEAP's podcast, we are talking to Julieta Juncosa, who is a PhD student at the Colorado State University. So welcome to the podcast, Julieta.
Hey, thank you, Gemma. I'm very excited about this.
Cool, thank you. So we're going to kind of dive straight into our first question, as we do on this podcast. And we always want to know from our interviewees, like, what has inspired you to become a scientist? So maybe we'll start there. What inspired you?
Yeah, so I don't think there's a single thing that I can pinpoint to why I decided to become a scientist, but there is like a combination of circumstances that led me onto this path. And I think the first thing that I would say is, of course, my parents and my upbringing in my household. My dad is a social science academic, and he has spent most of his days learning and relearning and, you know, preparing for classes. So he's relentless on his research, and so much so that he got his PhD 4 or 5 years ago, which was pretty awesome. My mom is a doctor, and she specializes in public health, and she has an amazing logic for all sorts of things, and she's an innate leader as well. So definitely growing up, I was very stimulated intellectually. Our conversations during lunch were very dynamic between my parents and my siblings. So that's one of the factors. The other one is that I was decently good at sciences in general in high school. I really enjoyed maths and chemistry and physics. And, you know, everything that involves logic and numbers. I am terrible, though, at memorizing things. So I knew, like, things like medicine, you know, that kind of stuff was not for me. So I wanted to study in college. I wanted to do something that involved everything that I really enjoyed. So something that involved maths and chemistry and physics. And later on, I really enjoyed doing biology. And so that's how I landed in a career in environmental engineering. And so that's what I did for my undergrad at Universidad San Francisco de Quito. And then on the way, I met my, you know, during my undergrad studies, I met my undergrad mentor, Maria Cazorla, and her love for the atmospheric science was just contagious. Like, she would come into the class and was just like so happy to share with us all her knowledge, and it was just wonderful. And so that's where like that bug for atmospheric science started growing in me. And to be honest, I always preferred working in a lab with water from, you know, treatment plants. That can get a little bit stinky sometimes, so I rather work with air. And finally, since I was a little kid, my mom has always highlighted the importance of education to my siblings and I, and how that helps us to be independent. So it was almost natural for me to continue on to graduate school after finishing college. And so I think it's a combination of all those circumstances that led me to a career in science.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Thanks. So you've already touched a little bit about where you might have studied previously. So could you maybe tell us a little bit more about that journey? Where you've studied and what skills maybe you've found useful so far during your sort of scientific career?
Yeah. So I guess saying that I'm an Ecuadorian. I was born and raised and lived in Quito, the capital of Ecuador, for most of my life. And I went to an all-girls high school, and then I took a gap year in between high school and college. I did a couple, 4 months in Scotland, living with my godmother, and then I went to Africa, to Angola for 6 months to, you know, live with nuns and in nuns that had a boarding school for girls there. Then I went back to Ecuador and I started my undergrad in environmental engineering, as I already told you, at Universidad San Francisco de Quito. And there I, well, it is a five. And my last year of my undergrad, this mentor, Maria, offered me a job at her lab. It's a measurement station at Universidad San Francisco de Quito. And so I accepted. And so I worked there as a technician for the last year of my undergrad. Then I graduated and then I stayed working there for 2 more years. During those 2 years in between, since I graduated, I applied for many scholarships and to, you know, go outside and continue my education. And in 2017, I was awarded a Fulbright scholarship. And so that's the thing that allowed me to come to the US to complete a master's in atmospheric science. And so that's where my, you know, kind of science journey began. I decided to come to CSU and work with Emily Fisher, who's an amazing mentor, and I couldn't wish for a better. And my goal was always to do a PhD, so that's where I am at now, and about to take my qualifying exams. And then I think that aside from my technical skills, which I really have to give a shout out to all my undergrad professors that did a great job in teaching me the fundamentals, I would say that one of the best skills that I have is that I take feedback. I am good at taking feedback and learning from it. And I have real effort on learning new things and keeping up to date and improving myself and my skills and increasing my knowledge. And so, of course, sometimes it's not as easy as others, but I would say that I am back and, you know, keep growing from it. I'm also extremely enthusiastic about things. Some people find that annoying, but, you know, I get super excited about new projects and that keeps me motivated in my work. Also, I come from a family of professors, and I think I just have it in me. So being able to be a TA has been super fun for me, and that's actually what I want to do in the future, being a professor. But I would say that one of the things that I feel most proud of is that I haven't lost the drive to work to whichever it might be, a place that is more welcoming to diversity. And so I put a lot of effort on that right now at CSU, but actually wherever life takes me, I really want to work towards a better welcoming, you know, making places more welcoming to a more diverse set of scientists or workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good. Thanks, Julieta. So, and good luck with the qualifiers as well. And I'm sure you'll terminate it. So maybe let's learn a little bit more about your PhD and what you're actually studying. So can you tell us a little bit more about that and why it's important that you're undertaking the research that you're undertaking at the moment?
Yeah, okay, so this is super fun. I'm super excited. And first, I would like to give you a little bit of context. So I study ammonia, and so ammonia is the most abundant base in the atmosphere. And, you know, some of its sources include agriculture. We have ammonia from biomass burning as well, and some other industrial activities. Ammonia is of concern because it is an ingredient or a precursor, right, for fine particulate matter. And so if there is ammonia in there and there are the right circumstances, then we can form this PM2.5 that it's dangerous to health. Also, ammonia, as it deposits on the ground, it can threaten the natural cycle of nitrogen. And so it soils or, you know, participate in eutrophication of water, of bodies of water. And so the regulations of nitrogen oxide, also known as NOx in the US, have been, you know, successful. And since then, ammonia has become the dominant form of nitrogen that is deposited on the ground around the US. And here in Colorado, there is it's really interesting in Colorado because there is a complex set of emission sources, and also terrain and the meteorology is very interesting. And so all of these make the study of ammonia interesting and necessary. So we have a large number of oil and gas wells, as well as many animal feeding operations around. And you can imagine that these are emitting ammonia from, you know, the composition of the waste from the animal. We are right now on a field campaign that is called Transportation and Transformation of Ammonia, or TransAm. And this campaign is intended to measure the emissions and evolution of ammonia from animal feeding operations. And we are also going to look at some upslope events, meaning that, you know, the flow of air goes from the east up into the mountains, to see what happens when ammonia mixes with urban emissions from the Colorado Front Range. And to meet the goals of TransAm, we have this super cool aircraft, which is the University of Wyoming King Air, which is a really, it's actually a small aircraft compared to others like the C-130 or the P-3. And we stuffed instruments to measure trace gases like ammonia and nitric acid and ethane and methane, and also particles. And what we do is we fly around with sampling strategies, and we sample these facilities to characterize their emissions. And we also do the sampling of the upslope events across the Colorado Front Range. So it's a super fun research.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. So just another little extra question. What's it like? So do you actually go in the plane when you're running the instruments, and or is it some remotely from the ground? How does it work? And can you explain what it was like when you maybe first had your first flight and did that?
Yeah, so sometimes I get to fly. So because we put a lot of instruments in the aircraft, there is actually a space just for one science person in the aircraft. So we take turns. And what I mostly do is support from the ground. So, you know, making sure that the instruments start well and are ready to fly. And then while the aircraft is in the air, flying with the person on board, and, you know, supporting the, because, you know, there are so many things happening when you are flying, that it's really nice to have someone to tell you, like, oh, maybe you missed this one, or you should, you know, think about this. So I have flown once in the King Air last week. I had my first flight. It was super excited, and I was also nervous, but you know, as I told you, there is a lot going on. You have to be, because you are ultimately, you are the one making all the decisions, so you need to be sure to communicate very well with the pilot, and just keep in mind all the things that are going on as you are flying. So it's really cool.
Yeah, it sounds really super cool, Julieta. Yeah. So could you maybe then like tell us, so we've obviously that's really one good moment, but have you faced any challenges then so far, like, you know, it can be on your science journey or even just during your PhD so far, and maybe tell us how you go about overcoming those sort of challenges and...
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this, and I think what I want to say is that being an international student is not easy. We have a lot of stress factors that add to the normal stress of grad school. So I can, you know, name some as language barriers, cultural barriers, you know, not being with family, stresses about paperwork. You know, if there are conflicts in our home countries, that's another added stress that, you know, we feel helpless. There's a, you know, a lot of my friends I make friends and then 6 months later they are gone. And so it makes you feel that you have to start and again and again. I love Colorado because of its mountains, its open space. Its people is very generous, generous, and they are nice, but I don't love its lack of diversity, especially in academia. And so that makes me feel very lonely. And, you know, COVID just made all of this worse. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if I have completely overcome this, but I am now trying to build back my community. I am being very, very aware of my mental health and just, you know, trying to get in touch with my family, with my friends back home, to make new friends here. And so I would say the strategy for me to overcome all these feelings is to just have a community where I feel supported and I feel safe.
Yeah, that's a good answer. And I think, like, I on so many of these podcasts that we've kind of these topics come up again and again, and that, so I think we're, you know, it's quite a something that kind of transcends no matter what country you're from or going to, or, you know, it's mm-hmm. kind of, yeah, it's across the board. So yeah, it's good advice as well, Julieta. So let's talk about the highlights then, and some of the best experiences. You've probably already touched on one, going in the plane. That was pretty cool. But but is there any other sort of career highlights or really, you know, the best experiences you've had so far?
So I was going to talk about the aircraft, and I was just going to say that doing science on board an aircraft is pretty cool and something that I would have never imagined I would be doing. I am so grateful that I get to do field work, because that just gives so much joy to my heart. I am just the happiest person when I'm in the lab. And it has, you know, it's been a really amazing journey to see the progress from, you know, we started almost a year ago when I was being trained by my mentor at CSU, Ilana, and she was like teaching me all about the instrument. And we did a lot of lab bench experiments to characterize the instrument very well. Then we went to the installation of the equipment, retesting it on the aircraft, and now being able to actually fly the instrument and able to look at the data and how the science goals materialize around the data that we are collecting. So it's really wonderful. I would say the other highlight has been to work with amazing people, right? Like my advisor, Emily Fisher, led the Weekend Field campaign, which was aimed to measure wildfire smoke. They did that in 2018. And so that's the year that I got here. So I was not directly involved with the campaign, but I did get to work with the data. And for her, I had 26 co-authors, and wow, like working with all of them was so cool. Like all of them were like giving you good feedback and like cheering you. And mm-hmm. so it was just a joy to work with that. I've also been blessed to work with satellite data. I think that's very important for me because, you know, I don't know if I go back to Ecuador, I don't know if I'll be able to work with this super expensive, fancy instrumentation, right? So I need to build my my toolbox to have other things that I can work with. And so I was very blessed to look at a new satellite product and also work with this other amazing group of scientists from JPL, which is the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, that they were also like cheering me and helping me. And so like living this experience of the science community and working together and collaborating, and you know, it has been really wonderful.
That's really cool. Thanks, Julieta. So just a quick little another little extra question. So what tools do you use like on a sort of so far during your PhD? So you said you use satellite data. What other things like tools and equipment do you use?
Yeah, so for my master's, I mostly did data analysis. So that involves, you know, a lot of coding mm-hmm. and, you know, analyzing the data and doing some calculations on the way. And I am using as well satellite products. And actually, I on the last summer of my PhD, I am going to work with, coming back. I was recently awarded NCAR Next Generation Fellowship, which is super cool. And wow. I'll get Congrats. To, thank you. Mm-hmm. And so on one of these includes 2 summers working in NCAR with one of the, you know, laboratories. And so one of these, of those summers, I'm going to work with a group that does modeling. And that is something that I have been really wanting to add to my toolbox, right? Like have this modeling skill that I can also bring back to Ecuador. Super enjoy coding. It's super fun and frustrating. I think satellites are the future. It's very exciting where the science that it's been done with satellites, I am very hopeful for the future. And then modeling, right? Like the things that I do is include more observations from Latin America in models, in, you know, chemistry models, because there are not so many. Let's see what the future brings me.
Yeah, it sounds exciting. And I'm, yeah, totally looking forward to seeing, you know, what you do next, Julieta. So what to kind of to wrap this up then, do you have any advice for early career scientists, either, you know, generally or something that might be more specific for people that are like either based in Latin America or going to study in Latin America in that region?
Okay, so... one of the advices that, you know, I wouldn't be here if it wouldn't be for all the people that have championed me and supported me on the way. And so this is a 2-piece of advice, right? Like first, look to work with someone that champions you and that, you know, wants to see your success. And the other one is that if you are in a position that you can be a support to someone and champion them, do it. And I think that's what we, not only in Latin America, I think that's what needs. There, you know, it was clear for me that I needed to leave Ecuador in order to study atmospheric science because there is just not a university that offers that career in Ecuador. And so having, you know, my mentor who told me, you know, she was telling me, oh, this university is great, this university is great. She gave me recommendation letters for all the applications that I submitted. And so, like, find someone that does that for you, or be someone for a student that really wants to do science. So that's one piece of advice. And then for Latin, I am convinced that there is, it's not that I'm convinced, but I know that there is great science happening in Latin America. But that science is not, it's really hard to share that science. And I think that we need to get, like, the whole world needs to get better at sharing from everywhere. And so, you know, as a scientist from Latin America, that keeping your collaborations alive is really important, and start building new networks across Latin America. Let's get together to discuss science. Let's collaborate. You know, let's start building a community, and let's start putting our science out in the world. So yeah, that's other, whenever I come back to Ecuador, is, you know, to start building, which there is already one down there, but I would say let's keep that going and keep it alive. Scholarship part. Again, like, I wouldn't have applied to all of these scholarships if there wouldn't have been someone that told me, like, hey, I think you would be a good candidate for this one, and someone that, you know, I could have discussed my proposals with, and who gave me letters of recommendations. And so, again, look at you that tell you about opportunities that, you know, encourage you to apply. It's it can be a very lonely, you know, journey if you have no one to support you. So again, like, let's be champions of others, and let's find someone that can champion us.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really cool kind of final message, Julieta. So yeah, with that, I would just really like to say it's been really great chatting to you. And thank you for coming to talk to us on the iLeaps Early Career Podcast. And good luck with your confirmation. Is it confirmation type of exam? Is that what you have to do for the
qualifying?
Qualifying. That's it. Yeah. So good luck for that. And we look forward to seeing your research in the future.
Emma, it has been super fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So that concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. And just to say, if you want to learn more about iLeaps, please go to our website, iLeaps.org, where you'll find a link to our early careers website, where you can follow us on Twitter at iLeaps_ECSN, or our Facebook page. Thanks.